Radio. Radio. Radio.
We just wanna party.
Hi, everybody. This is Brad with the United Way of Columbia and Greene Counties. You are listening to WGXC ACRA, Columbia and Greene Counties, 90.7 on the dial.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, heard weekday mornings here at 8 o'clock on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC is hosting its pledge drive, and we need your support. Help keep hands-on creative community radio alive in your region by calling 518-697-7400. That's 518-697-7400. Or you can pledge online with your tax-deductible pledge at wgxc.org/donate. That's wgxc.org/donate. Help WGXC meet its goal and keep local, national, and international news broadcasting in Greene and Columbia counties. Thanks so much.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Natasha Vaughn and Sarah Trafton report for Columbia Greene Media that after winter storms across the country delayed shipments of the COVID-19 vaccine locally, local counties are back on track. Quote, they're basically set back by 1 week because we didn't have any at all last week, unquote, Greene County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger said. Quote, this week they were able to finish up the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities population today, and we're doing 360 second doses tomorrow and 300 first doses for essential for 1B essential workers and people with comorbidities on Friday, unquote. Likewise, Columbia County received 900 doses this week, and on February 26th, they're giving out first doses to any eligible essential workers. Quote, all the spots for it filled up within about 35 minutes, unquote, Columbia County Health Director Jack Mabb said. Quote, it's essential workers, and we're reminding everyone who signs up that they have to have some form of proof. Teachers, firemen, any essential workers need to have some proof that they are eligible, unquote. So far, Greene County has vaccinated 11.5% of its population with at least one dose, while Columbia County is at 13.8%. Ulster County is at 12%. County Executive Pat Ryan said, quote, we have about 120,000 of our residents eligible, and each week across the whole county, we're getting somewhere from 1,000 to 2,000 doses. So about 1% each week of supply is received to meet a much bigger demand, unquote. Locally, here are vaccination locations with links on the WGXC newsroom to follow. SUNY Albany. You can click on the link at the WGXC Newsroom or call 1-833-697-4829. And Kelly's Pharmacy in Greenville is a 65-plus outlet. Wellness RX in Tannersville is also 65-plus only. They have also only a phone to call, 518-589-9500. It's the number to call there. Hannaford locations in Cairo, Delmar, Albany, and Troy are only doing 65-plus. ShopRite in Hudson is doing 65-plus. CVS in Valencia, Colony, and Kingston are doing 65-plus. And Walgreens is doing 65-plus. Click on the link on the WGXC Newsroom and enter your zip code for the nearest location.
Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup. The Greenville Central School District's head mechanic has been honored by the New York Association for Pupil Transportation. Ken Scarlatta recently received the association's Technician of the Year Award. The commendation recognizes a school bus technician who exemplifies the characteristics of excellence and quality and whose work results in a safer school bus and school bus travel for children. Greenville Superintendent Tammy Sutherland said, and I quote, "With his hard work, integrity, and safety focus for both students and drivers, he has earned the respect of all of his colleagues," end quote. She described Scarlatta as, and I quote, "an asset to the district," end quote. In April, Scarlatta will celebrate 20 years as Greenville's head mechanic. Founded in 1974, the association is a professional association whose members are employed in school districts, BOCES, community and technical colleges, and private school bus companies statewide. And you can read the full story in Porcupine Soup.
Edward McKinley and Emile Munson are reporting for the Times Union that a bipartisan group of New York officials are calling for an investigation into the allegations of sexual harassment by Governor Andrew Cuomo. But it is unclear at this point who would conduct that investigation and how insulated it would be from the many tentacles of the Cuomo administration. The calls for an independent investigation increased February 25th, one day after a former aide to the governor published an essay alleging he kissed her without her consent and engaged in a pattern of sexual harassment. The governor's office has denied the charges. Stephen M. Cohen, a longtime aide and Cuomo loyalist, spoke to the media on the governor's behalf February 25th, as Cuomo remained silent. The governor has not done a press briefing in several days, despite having one on his schedule Wednesday. In his comments, Cohen avoided a detailed response to the claims of a former Cuomo aide, Lindsay Bolin, who this week alleged that Cuomo had routinely commented on her appearance and touched her arms, back, and legs, once asked her to play strip poker on a private plane, and kissed her without consent in 2018. Cohen said he has known Cuomo for more than 30 years, and that his conduct in Cohen's presence had always been, quote, appropriate, not that it's always fun-loving and a good time, but it has always been appropriate, and he pushes to get results. And I think those results are obvious to everyone, unquote. Republicans were quick to jump on the Boylan story, calling for an investigation or even Cuomo's resignation, and outside groups and other Democrats began weighing in as well. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who has spoken out for years against workplace sexual harassment and sexual violence, said in a Thursday press call that she had not yet read Boylan's essay, but had seen news reports about it. Quote, "These allegations are serious and deeply concerning, and anyone has a right to come forward to be heard and have allegations be investigated," unquote, Gillibrand said. Asked to comment on the matter, Allison Bayasati, a spokesperson for Senate Majority Leader Charles Schumer, said he, quote, has said many times that sexual harassment is never acceptable and must not be tolerated, and that any credible allegation should be thoroughly investigated, unquote. An independent investigation into the allegations could potentially be handled by a special prosecutor, a bipartisan legislative panel, the state attorney general's office, or the Albany County District Attorney's Office. Five Republican state senators, all women, wrote a letter to Attorney General Letitia James late Wednesday saying that Cuomo's alleged actions, quote, are not only grossly inappropriate, they are also potentially criminal in nature, unquote. They called for a special prosecutor to investigate the claims. The Attorney General's office has not responded yet. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Korach announced this week it will permanently close Camp Mahican, a 55-year-old day camp in Columbia County. The decision was made after learning that $25,000 in state aid had been lost and there was no intention to replace it with another form of funding. CORAC advocates for and serves as a resource for children and adults with disabilities. It is a chapter of the ARC of New York. Ken Stahl, CORAC CEO, said, and I quote, "We couldn't make ends meet without that funding," end quote. He went on to say, and I quote, "That represents about a third of our funding," end quote. The organization learned state Stahl said the organization learned late last year that some funding from the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities would be discontinued. CAMP was supported by three forms of funding: state aid from the Office of People with Developmental Disabilities, which was eliminated, funding from Columbia County, and a family support contract that has also been discontinued. The loss of state support led to the loss of the family support contract, Stahl said. Camp Mohegan opened in 1966 as a day camp for children and youth ages 6 to 16 with disabilities. The camp initially ran for almost 2 full months during the summer. That schedule was eventually shortened to 6 weeks and later reduced further to 3 or 4 weeks each summer. Stahl said camp enrollment has been declining for several years. Hudson Fifth Ward Alderman Dominic Maranti served as director of Camp Mohegan for 15 years and was saddened to see the camp shut down. Maranti said, and I quote, "Camp Mohegan is the only camp in the area for children with disabilities. So for it to close is terrible," end quote.
Alila Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the staff of the Hudson Youth Department is receiving restorative justice training in an effort to facilitate conflict resolution and to help others in the city to do the same. The training has been in development since 2020, and the program has been growing, outgoing City Youth Director Nick Zacco said. The staff is being trained by the Newburgh-based Restorative Center. Restorative justice is a method of addressing social disconnect. The youth department has conducted at least 6, quote, restorative circles, unquote, over the past 6 months, Zacco said. In both situations, participants were satisfied with the result without police or court involvement. Quote, "I think that's the heart of it," unquote, he said. Quote, "Being able to work out issues outside the typical systems, which, while they serve a purpose, they're not right for every situation," unquote. A restorative circle is a facilitated discussion with people who are involved with a specific incident, people who can support them, and people who may have been affected, Zacco said. Circles are facilitated by someone who has been trained in restorative practices. The youth center has turned to a restorative circles to address conflict between youth, staff, or both. The process allows everyone to be heard and a solution to be reached instead of imposing disciplinary action. The youth department wants to become a resource for the larger Hudson community and is currently in conversations with the court system, social services, police department, and social district. The goal is for the youth staff to train others. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Danny Jin is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle. If some Massachusetts lawmakers and advocates have their way, the Commonwealth will soon join 16 states, including Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and Vermont, to allow people without legal status to obtain a driver's license. State Representative Tricia Farley Bovier of Pittsfield is one of the 4 lead sponsors of the Work and Family Mobility Act, which she says now has the support needed to pass during the new legislative session. The proposal amassed 60 co-sponsors, as well as a public expression of support from Senate President Karen Spilka, but never made it to the floor for a vote. Supporters, including some in law enforcement, argue that opening licensing and training opportunities to undocumented residents would make roads safer while also improving equity of access to health and economic opportunity. An estimated 200,000 people live in Massachusetts without legal papers, and the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center said in March 2020 that 41,000 to 78,000 drivers could get licensed in the first 3 years if the bill passed. Republican Governor Charlie Baker opposes the bill, meaning that lawmakers might need the support of a 2/3 majority to override a veto. Baker's concern is that it would be difficult to verify the identity of people if they are undocumented. However, many undocumented people have some forms of identification, such as a student ID or a passport. At an event this week, Farley Bovier said the bill has more supporters in office now than during the previous session, and filed the legislation in the Massachusetts House along with other representatives. She said the bill's supporters will be, and I quote, working closely, end quote, with new House Speaker Ron Mariano to pass what they see as, and I quote, common sense legislation, end quote. Read more in the Berkshire Eagle.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that a coalition of 21 attorneys general nationwide, led by New York Attorney General Letitia James, has been formed to defend state-level measures banning 3D printed guns. The firearms can be manufactured through downloadable materials and a 3D printer in a person's home. New York in 2019 approved legislation banning 3D guns, and other states have approved similar measures as well. One of the main concerns among policymakers is the guns are essentially untraceable because they do not have serial numbers or other identifiable features. Quote, for years we've been fighting Defense Distributed's illegal efforts to make dangerous assault weapons more easily accessible to anyone with an internet connection, unquote, James said. The AG said that despite the lawsuits filed and the cease and desist letters sent, Defense Distributed has repeatedly taken steps, quote, to make it easier for criminals and terrorists to get their hands on guns and for anyone to print unregistered, untraceable, and in many cases undetectable firearms, unquote. Read more about this story at midhudsonnews.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, sunny with a high near 41 degrees. Friday night, a chance of snow mainly after 4 a.m. with increasing clouds and a temperature low of around 25 degrees. And on Saturday, snow is likely before 10 a.m., followed by likely rain. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 45 degrees. And Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 33. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Friday, February 26th. Attempts to return to my home dimension have gone awry. The Starfoids are hunting me, but the data is still streaming into my devices. It's going to be 42 degrees today. Light snow is expected, but will not accumulate. 25 overnight. Rain expected tomorrow, but highs still in the 40s. Sunday will be the same with more light rain. It looks like the makers are going to attempt to download my molecular data set across the dimensional buckle. The advanced mechanism only works by feeding in American currency, and I need your help to return home. To get weather back in order and to help me survive, hurry on over to WGXC.org and click donate. Sustaining members are the most potent of energy sources. They literally keep the lights on. If I don't escape the Starfoid soon, I'm a goner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Miles and Pepper of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Please consider becoming a sustaining supporter today during our WGXC 10th anniversary pledge drive. Go to WGXC.org/donate or wavefarm.org/donate or call 518-697-6000. 7400. WGXC's 10th anniversary pledge drive, as we're celebrating 10 years of bringing you community views and news and letting the community have access to one sliver of the airwaves. 90.7 FM is the only place on the dial that you'll hear your friends and neighbors conversing about local issues and having their say about what's important to them and their community on their local airwaves. If you think that's important and want to keep the community conversation ever present on 90.7 FM for another 10 years, please consider becoming a sustaining supporter today during our WGXC 10th anniversary pledge drive. Go to wgxc.org/donate or wavefarm.org/donate or call 518-697-7400. That's 518-697-7400. Make a donation today at wgxc.org/donate. Become a sustaining supporter. And for just $5 a month, 17 cents a day, you can make sure and ensure that your friends and neighbors continue to have access to their own airwaves, and you can continue to hear them converse on your local dial at 90.7 FM.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Every picture in the whole, words spoken evenly because every word has value. Nothing is boring. 15, okay, 15, but make it fast. Franks repeated on the diagonal. The taconic diner in faded yellow. Now other people are in the room. The inner voice weaves through tall grass and subways. Somewhere in the book of disquiet is a failure to believe. Detail aggravates by what it promises and doesn't deliver. Clouds for clouds, the Shutterstock ad. Through a dumpster. They're scavenging red wires. No, they're dried chilies. I should take a picture. Luviola, Rothstein, Epstein. Where did she find all these words? Golden, lion, tamarind, monkeys. The tower outside Prospect Park Station has a rusty splotch where the clock used to be. I try to remember to pet the cat before I leave. One time a driver cursed me on the beach at Chappaquiddick. For dinner, and I'm thinking Russ and Daughters. Take the F train to Kew Gardens. F. Murray, Mozart, tedious. It might take a while. Some want to see All Guns Banned. To them I say, get real, this is America. I went right up to a sign and looked behind it. A green sweater on a white chair, sunflowers on a pillow, clothes in a sink. I never take pictures of strangers. They'll get mad. We'll be right back.
That was 36 Ways of Looking at a Memory from Sky Furrows, which is Columbia County poet Karen Schomer with Capital Region musicians Eric Hardiman, Mike Griffin, and Phil Donnelly. Their self-titled album Sky Furrows came out in October 2020.
Thank you. That was Catskill's Ross Goldstein with Bas Relief from his 2020 album Tomoka.
It's time to get up and stomp your feet to this great foot-stomping Transylvanian beat. Start nice and slow.
1, 2.
Then speed up more.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Then stomp away.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
The number of the day.
What's the number? Stop, stop. What's the number? Stop, stop. What is the number?
The number of the day rhymes with hen and pen. The number of the day is 10.
WGXC turns 10 this February, and our 10th anniversary pledge drive is coming to you soon.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10.
We're asking you to become a sustaining supporter to make sure the community has access to its own airwaves for another 10 years of community broadcasting.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If you like what you hear on WGXC, make a donation at WGXC.org and make it a sustaining donation. Something like 17 cents a day or $5 a month will help keep community radio on the airwaves. At least this one sliver, 90.7 FM, where all are welcome. WGXC.org/donate.
10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 tiny turtles on the telephone talking with the grocery men. We would like some lettuce. Will you send us 10 heads, please? And 10 sweet potatoes and 10 rutabagas with the dimples on the knees. And send us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 big party jokes. 10 eggplants over easy. That's one of our little jokes. 10 leafy, leafy collard greens. And please make sure they're washed. Light up our eyes, brighten our lives with 10 banana squash. And we'll eat 10 cans of black-eyed peas. They give you good, strong muscles. 10 of those tasty sprouts, the ones that they call Brussels. We also like 10 mangoes. They're the favorite of our sister Gert. And one last thing, please do include 10 apples for dessert.
10.
It's WGXC's 10th anniversary this February. And all year, we will be celebrating 10 years of community voices on the radio. We'll have a special live broadcast and performance May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In. And if you become a sustaining supporter or increase your sustaining support of WGXC during the February pledge drive, we'll give you a ticket if you want for the Greenville Drive-In show May 26th at 7:30 p.m. with Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields performing, Anna Frizz also performing, Catskill's Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler, and Jess Spear also performing. More artists to be announced at the WGXC 10th anniversary performance, the Greenville Drive-In, May 26th. And if you become a sustaining supporter for the first time during WGXC's February pledge drive, or increase your sustaining support of the community radio station, you can get a ticket to the Greenville Drive-In show with Stephen Merritt, Anna Frizz, Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler, Jess Spear, and more, May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In for WGXC 90.7 FM.
10. 10. 10. Ten. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
We're happy to welcome Kwame Holmes, the cohort advisor of the Bard Back program, Bard College's tuition-free, full scholarship bachelor's degree program for local adult students. Kwame, can you hear us? Oops, I think we can hear you now. Yes.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Man, the sun is shining. Feels like spring's around the corner. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
It's a little chillier today, but it has felt more spring-like the last couple of days, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah.
So tell us what the program is and where people can find out information about it. And I think there's a deadline approaching that people need to know about too, right?
That's right. So, sorry, just to apologize for that cough. Just to give you a little bit of background, this last year, we're a year into COVID, as everyone knows too well, and Bard was trying to think about, you know, how can we respond to this crisis? I mean, we thought that there might be a lot of people out there who might have lost work and were looking for a new start, or there was maybe a kind of broad reckoning about their current life, and they wanted to take a new direction, and that direction might require a college degree. And so this is a scholarship program that's really pitched to people 24 and older, who have either never been to college before or who have some college but didn't finish. We offer a full scholarship as well as paying for books for all classes, full tuition scholarship, that is. And you can find the information to apply at bard.bac.edu, which is bard.bac.edu. And you'll find there the application process. And that's right, the deadline is March 1st. So we do hope that you'll scurry throughout the weekend to finish that application.
And how long has Bard been running this program? And tell us, have there been results yet, or how's it been going?
We are not yet finished with our first year. So the program was conceived at the end of the spring semester of 2020, and we put it together that summer. I think I came on, if not with you, someone else on this station to talk about it, and people applied, and we have about 30 students in the program out of a good number of applicants, and we are thrilled. They've all done quite well. I think our GPA is above average for a bar student. And I think one of the reasons for that is because people who have left school and returned back to it have a different kind of appreciation. And that's one of the reasons why we're really excited about how this program can transform the Annandale campus by introducing, you know, fully grown adults at all different age ranges. We have, I think our average age at the program is 41. So it's exciting.
And I guess you can't really measure what you certainly can't yet, but you can't really, it's difficult to measure what impact it'll have on the wider community.
Well, yeah, we're still early, but our ambitions in this regard are significant. We hope that we will get a lot of applicants from the Hudson Valley specifically. We right now, nearly everyone in the program is from the Hudson Valley. We have a few who came from Massachusetts and a few who came from New York City, but the vast majority are from the Hudson Valley. And so we are working to bring more of the Hudson Valley to Annandale, and we hope that people will then bring the skills that they learn at Bard and the degree that they earn at Bard to the Hudson Valley, to Hudson Valley nonprofits, to Hudson Valley employers, to Hudson Valley arts production and institutions. And we think, you know, one of the things that I am always struck as a relative newcomer to the Hudson Valley, I moved here in 2019 from Colorado, is that there is quite a bit of income inequality here, and there's a lot of people who are profoundly talented working low-wage jobs because they don't have a college degree. And we want to do our best to help those people to take advantage of all the unexpected economic growth that's happening in the region, right? We don't want it to just be for the newcomers like myself or New Yorkers.
Yeah, and that economic disparity has actually kind of grown wider during the pandemic as the rich have gotten richer, but the poor have not gotten any benefits, and the and the people rushing to the Hudson Valley has made the housing crisis kind of worse here. And so people that are living here have had their rents go up or have been forced out of communities and farther away from their jobs.
That's right, yeah. I was just looking the other day, because I'm also an administrator within Kingston Mutual Aid, and people have been posting notices that there's quite a few retail job opportunities out there, which offer a decent wage, but it's not a decent wage if you have to drive 50 miles in gas to get to work. And though that's a good way of thinking about the Bard Baccalaureate too, because people should know that this is a scholarship program. It doesn't come with a stipend. And so it might, and people have to take at least 12 credits a semester. That's three classes. And the way that the scholarship works is that to graduate from Bard, you need to earn 128 credits. There's no time limit. So your scholarship will not have a clock on it. The scholarship only has a credit limit on it. So the idea for some people, it may be that you can take half time off of work, or if you're, and you can do four classes a semester. But if you have to work relatively still full time and it's a slower path through the degree, there's no barrier to your participation in the program. If you're currently unemployed, you possibly could move through faster if you're able to get unemployment benefits. The other thing that we are encouraging our students to consider is to do what Bard students do now, which is to live together and rent a group house as a way of limiting their costs so they can move through the program faster.
Have you noticed, it may be too soon to answer this question, but have you noticed any particular area of study among these students?
Well, I think that this has been an interesting part of the work that we're doing, that I want to make a broad statement before I try to answer more specifically. One of the most important parts of my role in this project as cohort mentor is to help guide the students through their return to education, which does include the selection of a major degree. But one of the things that's been so fascinating is realizing that whatever someone left behind when they stop their educational journey, it comes up. It's there as soon as they return. So if a person believes that they're not very good at math, the years in between haven't necessarily convinced them of the falseness of that belief. So we're always trying to encourage students to take classes and to consider majors that will challenge them. We have some people who've chosen things within the humanities and social sciences, which of course are deeply important in Bard. My PhD is in American history. We also are trying to encourage our students to consider what they think they might not be good at in terms of STEM. But the other thing that's really nice about the program is that we've got folks who are coming in who don't actually have a career ambition. They want a college degree simply because they want one, and that's fine. Bard is certainly a place where it's not – one of the benefits of Bard is that it thinks about education beyond the immediate financial material concerns of a job and a sort of career path. And some people criticize Bard for that, but my thinking is that there's – and the culture is so direct in that direction already – one space that's less, a little free from that isn't so bad.
Yeah, I'm also wondering how this probably is an unanswerable question too. Always a good way to introduce a question. how have these students worked with so-called regular Bard students? Is there any culture clash there, or is there not much interaction because of the pandemic?
Yeah, I think that there is. Well, for one thing, the pandemic has meant that there's much more virtual education than there would normally be
right,
at Bard.
Yeah.
So that is that is slightly different. And I also want to make sure that I just said the website again, which I think I might have actually said incorrectly at the start. It's bac.bard.edu, where you can find the application process. And our students have at times more felt a clash with like modern day educational technologies, like having to work with Google Docs, having to figure out PowerPoint or Blackboard. Some of the online learning platforms have proven a challenge. And one of the things that we offer specifically within the Bard Back, which is different than the Bard College Return to College program, is that the first year in the Bard Back, you have a required class called the Back Seminar, which is kind of like an on-ramp back into college to ease that transition. And then I and my compatriot, Dorothy Crane, we run a weekly check-in where we're just like, hey, how is this going? How are things happening in classes? And sometimes students will report that they find their younger classmates and also their differentially privileged classmates to be a complex set of people to interact with, and also very rewarding and challenging, and all the things that are in every relationship. Yeah, but I think the clash is more the return to the culture of school and the difficulty of re-inhabiting the vulnerability of being a student and saying, I don't know, and how do I do this? And for many people, that can be a difficult emotional move, but such a necessary one and part of what we're trying to teach.
And if you apply now, this is for the term that starts in late August or September. Is that right? Or how does that work?
That's right. If you go to bac.bard.edu and you complete the application, if you were to be accepted, you would start in the fall. And I do want to just talk very briefly, if I can, about some of the unique requirements for the application. If a person goes to the website that I just said, which again is bac.bard.edu, you'll be asked to fill out four things. One is the common application, and the common application is something that every Bard student would have to fill out. You'd fill it out as a transfer student. The other is a federal financial aid form, or a FAFSA. The third is a CSS, which is just another financial disclosure form, which allows for the college to determine your financial eligibility for the scholarship. You do have to be Pell eligible in order to qualify, and that's a combination of income and assets. So I can't give anyone a hard number of how much money per year you would have to make. And that's what the CSS form helps them to determine. And then the final one is the specific Bard Baccalaureate application, where you'll be asked to write an essay. The thing that I want to tell people also is that Bard does not care about standardized tests. We don't. If you're applying to this program, your high school GPA is not particularly important to us. We have questions that are specifically designed to ask about your life experience and the things which you bring that are beyond the numbers. That's the other side. That's one of the nicer sides of what I was saying earlier about Bard's relative less interest in a kind of hard-nosed career-only path. We see the person as a whole entity, and we do not reduce them to numbers.
And so this is starting in August or September. Do you anticipate being back in the classroom then?
That is our sincere hope. That is our sincere hope. We believe that this, even though New York State is in the bottom 10 of states in terms of vaccination distribution, that still by the end of the summer, early fall, we will be, there'll be enough herd immunity that we can return to class. That is our hope. But those decisions are made at the top of the college hierarchy, and I'm somewhere near the knee. So, I don't know.
And it's out of your hands to some extent, because I think we're at like 12% vaccination locally, roughly, in most counties. So that pace has got to speed up. And the federal authorities are saying it's going to speed up, but we all have to wait to see if it actually does speed up, I guess, right?
With bated breath, you and me both, yeah.
All but those 12% are waiting with bated breath for their vaccine, or most.
That's,
I guess.
Right.
How is Bard doing aside from this program in terms of getting through COVID? I guess you're just started another semester or about to, or
we're doing well. We've done our best to do in-person education this term. I'm hesitant to speak because there's a whole administrative apparatus around COVID, and I can only report as a employee. But there's a pretty strict testing regime. I wouldn't say strict in a punitive sense, a comprehensive testing regime that's randomized faculty, staff, and students. Students who have had exposure are quarantining, and what I've seen is a lot of compliance. I just got an email a moment ago from a student saying she's in quarantine and she has to have class over Zoom today. Bard's not doing a spring break. We're doing 5 respite days throughout the term to discourage travel. So Bard is really doing its best, and I think the reason why that's the case is because we're an educational institution that's really predicated upon the in-person classroom experience. That's what Bard offers, you know, that's unique from larger colleges and research universities, is the intimate relationships between faculty and students, both within the classroom, in office hours, at the various events. It's a lovely village over there in Annandale, and I think we all miss, even though we're in person, we're still missing part of that, and can't wait to have the full experience again.
And hopefully in person soon. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Kwame Holmes, the cohort advisor of the Bard Back program, about Bard College's tuition-free, full scholarship bachelor's degree program for local adult students from the Hudson Valley. And we're going to have to go in a second. But Kwame, give out the information one more time about the deadline is Monday, March 1st.
That's right. Monday, March 1st by midnight Eastern time. And we want to just say, if you think you're going to be late, turn it in anyway. The website is bac.bard.edu, and I just want to say that the application, it might seem daunting. We've done our best to provide written instructions. However, if you are unsure, you can reach out to me at KHOLM as in Mary, ES as in Sam, at bard.edu. Or you can reach out to Madeline George, who's the head of admissions for the baccalaureate program, and she's at george@bard.edu. So please reach out to us. It's our actual paid gig to help you navigate the application process, and we'd be really happy to do so.
All right. Well, we were really happy that you could join us today to tell our listeners about this program that they should take advantage of if they can, and get the application in by Monday.
Thank you so much. It was a great chatting with you.
All right. Thank you too, Kwame. Thank you.
This is VFR Kature, and you're listening to WGXC Alka 98.7 FM.
Tune in to the WGXC 10th anniversary and celebrate 10 years of your friends and neighbors making radio with you and for you. The WGXC 10th anniversary pledge drive is from February 15th to February 28th, 2021. Visit our website at wavefarm.org/donate or call 518-697-7400 to become a sustaining supporter at just 17 cents a day or $5 a month. Please help us make sure Creative Community Radio stays on the air for another 10 years. Call now, 518-697-7400, or visit our website, wavefarm.org/donate.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jim McCabe of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service DOA Newscast, February the 26th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. With the Senate considering President Joe Biden's massive infrastructure plan, a new study finds West Virginia stands to gain thousands of living wage jobs if the federal government invested some of the plan's key projects.
Bankrolling broadband expansion, clean energy, and a more sustainable transportation system would bring more than 41,000 jobs to the Mountain State, according to study lead author Robert Polin. Based on federal government statistics, he says the jobs should be union level with good wages, conditions, and pensions.
These will be jobs across the board. A lot of jobs in construction, but also jobs in sales, management, production, engineering, office support, chemists, farmers, community service managers across the board.
He estimates the job creation would need about a $2 billion government investment along with private funding. He urges lawmakers to back Biden's Build Back Better infrastructure plan, which, based on West Virginia's population, he says would bring in more than $2 billion in funds needed. I'm Diane Bernard.
Meantime, the House passed sweeping legislation Thursday to ban discrimination against people based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Politico reports it delivers a major victory to the LGBTQ community while exposing an ugly rift in the GOP. The Equality Act, which would amend the 1964 Civil Rights Act to provide protections for gay individuals, garnered unanimous support from House Democrats on its way to approval. The vote was 224 to 206. Politico notes that three Republicans crossed party lines to join Democrats to endorse the bill, but that is less than half the number of GOP votes the measure got the last time it came to the floor. President Biden has charged top White House officials with ensuring that communities living in the shadows of the nation's power plants, highways, and refineries receive at least 40% of benefits from new investments in clean energy, public transit, affordable housing, and pollution controls.
Michelle Roberts with the Environmental Justice Health Alliance for Chemical Policy Reform says redlined neighborhoods in Nebraska and across the U.S. should be at the front of the line.
We need to prioritize those communities in such a way that we provide remedy and redress and make these communities whole.
In the 1930s and 40s, the Federal Homeowners Loan Corporation drew maps of U.S. cities, including Lincoln and Omaha, outlining in red where people of color lived. White neighborhoods received federal funding and benefited with amenities, including better schools. Redlined areas were the only parts of cities where Black and Latino families could live. I'm Eric Galatis.
This is PNS. A measure in the state legislature would remove protections from a wilderness study area in southwestern Montana. Eric Tadoff tells us opponents see it as an effort to repeal other study areas in a top-down manner.
Senate Joint Resolution 7 would remove Hidden Pasture Creek's study area designation. The designations are aimed at determining if the areas have wilderness characteristics. Jack Kirkley is a professor of biology at the University of Montana Western, who notes he's not speaking on behalf of the school. He agrees that it's time to resolve the issue of these study areas, but says passing resolutions in the legislature is not the right way.
Simply saying, here's our resolution to take it away and not have any further study or consideration of it, is sort of shortcutting the input by citizens.
A report from the legislature's Environmental Quality Council last year determined a collaboration among many stakeholders was the best way to approach Montana's study areas.
In Idaho, the smallest businesses are struggling to weather the pandemic. Jonathan Amisa owns Sky Road Medical Transport in Boise, which provides non-medical emergency moves to places such as doctor appointments. He says COVID-19 slowed down his business to the point where he's had to let some employees go.
They left family to me. We pretty much tell each other everything. We support each other, and I have to let them go. It's so painful, and mentally it kind of haunted me, and it's still haunting me right now.
On the plus side, Amisa says he has been able to get financial assistance from federal government relief programs, a Boise City grant, and from the organization Economic Opportunity by Janus. Finally, Mike Moen tells us the reliability of clean energy thrust back into the spotlight following recent power failures in southern states.
The extreme cold that gripped the central U.S. in mid-February led to massive outages in places like Texas and Oklahoma. That prompted politicians opposed to renewable energy to claim that frozen wind turbines were to blame. But electrical grid experts say the lack of weatherization of fossil fuel plants was a key factor. Kerry Johansson of the Iowa Environmental Council says in this region, wind energy has been dependable in cold weather.
We did not have problems with icing or turbines shutting down because of the weather, because the turbines are prepared for that.
Johansson says the reliability is crucial because wind now accounts for more than 40% of Iowa's electricity. Other supporters, like the Environmental Defense Action Fund, say grid capacity needs more investment.
That same poll found broad support, including 78% for both independents and Republicans, for increasing energy storage capabilities. This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. Member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations across the nation and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Phil Grant. Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup. The House Budget Committee, February 22nd, approved President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. The American Rescue Plan contains an estimated $438 million in direct federal funding for counties, towns, and villages in the 19th Congressional District. This includes all of Columbia, Delaware, Greene, Otsego, Schoharie, Sullivan, Ulster, and parts of Broome, Dutchess, Montgomery, and Rensselaer counties. Greene County is eligible for an estimated $9 million. Towns within the county are looking at a total of about $8.7 million, while the county's villages are likely to receive just under $1.7 million. Greene County Legislative Chair Pat Linger, who spoke with Delgado in early February, said, and I quote, "The devil's in the details as to what we will be able to use it for," end quote. Linger said, and I quote, "Keeping my fingers crossed, it's unrestricted," end quote. Most local towns and villages have carried some expense related to the pandemic, such as modifying offices, installing plexiglass or dividers, and purchasing personal protective equipment. Many local governments also received or are slated to receive less state aid than in previous years. However, these cost and revenue reductions are much less than what they are earmarked to receive in the federal relief bill. The bill will head to the House floor later this week and, if approved, will go to the Senate, where it is expected to face opposition from Republicans. Aid earmarked for Greene County towns and villages includes $728,500 for the town of Athens, $296,200 for the village of Athens, $1,190,000 for the town of Cairo, $2,100,000 for Coxsackie, $493,400 for the village of Coxsackie. Delgado said, and I quote, getting federal COVID-19 dollars in the hands of local governments has been and will continue to be my top priority. I won't stop fighting until this package passes the House, Senate, and is signed into law by the president. Read the full list of aid earmarked for Greene County at porcupinesoup.com. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Ichabod Crane School Board voted February 9th to approve the start of varsity and JV boys and girls basketball, varsity boys volleyball, varsity JV and modified girls volleyball, varsity football, varsity cheerleading, and varsity wrestling. The board included language in the resolution requiring a testing protocol for wrestling. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo last month announced that high-risk sports could begin practice and competition on February 1st if permitted by local health authorities. Ichabod's athletic director Tim Stewart said, and I quote, it kind of caught everyone off guard, end quote. The County Department of Health advised schools to hold off on high-risk sports until there was a drop in the 7-day rolling average in the positivity rate for COVID-19. But on February 10th, County DOH Director Jack Mabb gave the go-ahead for county schools to start practice. Stewart told the board there would be no spectators at games, that athletes must wear face coverings unless they cannot be tolerated, and the plan is to stay as close to home as possible for away games. He also said that 5 of the districts in the Colonial Council are holding off on wrestling for various reasons. The county DOH recommended that each student athlete have medical clearance from his or her health care provider and that students must have a parent or guardian's informed consent. And all student athletes must be tested once a week using rapid antigen tests supplied by the county and or Questar 3 BOCES. Cross county track, field hockey, and soccer are already approved since they are considered low to moderate risk sports. Stewart said if the number of COVID-19 cases increase in Columbia County, sports will be paused. Read full story in the Columbia paper. Edward McKinley is reporting for the Times Union. State Board of Elections released voter data this week showing that enrollment for both Democrat and Republican parties has decreased since November, while the ranks of the number of Capital Region residents enrolling in the conservative and working class families parties has increased. New York reduced the number of parties allowed ballot access in the November presidential election, so now only the Democrat, Republican, Conservative, Working Families parties and other remain, as well as people who left their party enrollment blank. The Conservative and Working Families saw growth region-wide, particularly the WFP, which measured significant gains in Albany, Schenectady, Saratoga, and Rensselaer counties. Anita Thayer, Secretary of the Capital Region WFP, said the group has focused on signing up new members in Rensselaer County after hearing reports about GOP-led efforts to take over the ballot line. The Conservative Party has grown in Albany, Rensselaer, and Warren counties, while it remained the same or decreased in Washington, Schenectady, Saratoga, Greene, and Columbia counties. Statewide, Democratic enrollment decreased less than 1%, while GOP enrollment less than 2%. In the Capital Region, enrollment for the two major parties decreased in each of the 8 counties, with Democrats decreasing more than Republicans. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Friday, February 26th. Attempts to return to my home dimension have gone awry. The Starfoids are hunting me, but the data is still streaming into my devices. It's going to be 42 degrees today. Light snow is expected, but will not accumulate. 25 overnight. Rain expected tomorrow, but high still in the 40s. Sunday will be the same with more light rain. It looks like the makers are going to attempt to download my molecular data set across the dimensional buckle. The advanced mechanism only works by feeding in American currency, and I need your help to return home. To get weather back in order and to help me survive, hurry on over to WGXC.org and click donate. Sustaining members are the most potent of energy sources. They literally keep the lights on. If I don't escape the Starfoid soon, I'm a goner.
GXC first went on the air February 26th, 2011. Today marks a decade of broadcasting 3,300 watts of community voices to the residents of the Upper Hudson Valley. To celebrate, WGXC is hosting an awards show from 7 to 9 p.m. Friday, February 26th, tonight. Current volunteer programmers voted, and below are the top five vote-getters are listed in alphabetical order. At 7 p.m. tonight, the winners will be announced live on 90.7 FM and WGXC.org during the two-hour awards ceremony. So now the nominees. First, for Best Local Album from 2020, we've got five great local records.
from Catskill. The first nominee is Ross Goldstein and the Tomoka album. Currently residing in Cairo, the second nominee is Jen Cutler with Disembodied. From somewhere in the city of Hudson, sometimes, our next nominee is the Magnetic Fields and the Quickies album. Then from somewhere in Columbia County, and other members are in Albany and around the Hudson Valley, Skyfurs and the Skyfurs album. And our fifth and final nominees reside in the town, or I think the village of Catskill. Let's hear it for Amy Rigby and Reckless Eric with Vote the Blanker Out. That's a single. The rest were albums. All right. Our next category is Best WGXC Morning Show or WGXC Afternoon Show. And the nominees are the Drive Time Edition Wednesday of the WGXC Afternoon Show, the Lilele Ton edition Sundays of the WGXC Afternoon Show, the Thursday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show, the Tuesday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show, and our final nominee is the Wednesday edition of the WGXC Morning Show. All right, the next nomination is for Best Music Programmer. Here we go. Our nominees are Peter McParland and Anna Kanevskaya with Rock and Roll High School, Cheryl Kay of the Jazz Disturbance, Maria Manhattan of the Hudson Cafe, Spike Priggen of the Bedazzled Radio Hour, and Alan Skerritt of Crossroads and Rhythm. Favorite show or segment you never want to miss. Our first nominee is the All Together Now show Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. and Monday through Thursday and Saturday, 6 p.m. Second nominee is Clubhouse Radio, Fridays live at 6 p.m. and replayed at 4 a.m. Saturdays and 10 a.m. Sundays. And then the Drive Time edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show, Wednesdays, 4 to 6 p.m. Our fourth nominee is Donald Trump Theater, which does not air anymore. And the fifth and final nominee is the Lilele Ton edition Sundays of the WGXC Afternoon Show, Sundays 4 to 6 p.m. Our next category is WGXC Programmer You Most Want to Hang Out With. And the nominees are Phil Grant, the WGXC newscaster, Cheryl Kay of the Jazz Disturbance, Maria Manhattan from the Hudson Cafe, the Magic Stranger from the Magic Stranger Show, Alan Skerritt from Crossroads and Rhythm, and finally Neva Wartell from Music for the Masses. Next, we have favorite past show or programmer on WGXC. This is a host that is no longer on 90.7 FM, but a show that you miss from days ago or years ago. Our first nominee is The Bangla Show from Hosnera Cater. Second nominee is Lunar Moss from Lunar Moss. The third nominee is The Monday Musical Matinee from Lincoln Mayorga. The fourth nominee is The Shomer Show from Karen Shomer. The fifth nominee is the WGXC Afternoon Show, Thursday edition with Ellen Thurston. Our next category in the WGXC Awards that will be announced from 7 to 9 p.m. tonight live on 90.7 FM. Next category is Most Unpredictable Host on WGXC. And the nominees... Number one, first, Vern Cross from the Drive Time Wednesday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show. Our second nominee also comes from a WGXC Afternoon Show. It's Tom DiPietro from the Thursday WGXC Afternoon Show. Our next nominee is his partner in crime, CeCe Graham, from the Thursday WGXC Afternoon Show. Two more nominees, Kamal Johnson from the Drive Time edition of the Wednesday Afternoon Show, WGXC Afternoon Show. And finally, our fifth and final nominee is Dan Seward from the Battlefield Earth Show. All right, the next category is Best WGXC Interviewer. And our first nominee is Vern Cross from the Drive Time Wednesday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show. Our second nominee is Tom DiPietro from the Thursday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show. Next nominee is Jeff Economy from the Snack Point Charlie Show. Next nominee is Cheryl Kay of the Jazz Disturbance. Next nominee is Ed Mack from the Drive Time Wednesday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show. Next nominee is Tom Rowe of the WGXC Morning Show. That's me. Next nominee is the Reverend Kim Singletary from the Tuesday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show. Our next category is second favorite local radio station. Everyone's favorite local radio station here is WGXC, but our second favorite local radio station, here are the nominees. Radio Kingston. Radio Woodstock. WAMC. WMHT. And finally, WOOC. We've got two nominees for favorite local DJ on another local radio station. And the nominees are Peter Aaron, the Go Go Kitty Show on Radio Kingston. That is simulcast on WGXC. And then other nominee is Ida Aquila from the Heavy Light Show on Radio Kingston. Our next nominee is local organization that did the most during the pandemic. Our nominees are Catskill Mutual Aid, the Hudson Youth Department, Liam Singer for work on making masks in Catskill, Sarah Van Buren for her email list, and WGXC Community Radio. Next category is the most creative show on WGXC, and the nominees are Battlefield Earth from Dan Seward, Donald Trump Theater from Tom Rowe, that's me, Rancho Thatchmo from Thatcher Keats, They're There from Alana Medlock, and Singularity from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. The best news or cultural show. The nominees are All Together Now from multiple contributors. Clubhouse Radio from Catskill Teenagers. The Drive Time Wednesday edition of the WGXC Afternoon Show. Donald Trump Theater from Tom Rowe, that's me. The Lille Laton edition Sundays of the WGXC Afternoon Show. All right, just a few more categories left. Best Music Show. The nominees are Algorithm as Ritual from Patrick Quinn. The Hudson Cafe from Maria Manhattan. The Jazz Disturbance from Cheryl Kay. The Magic Stranger Show from The Magic Stranger. And last but not least, Rock and Roll High School from Peter McPartland and Anya Kanuskaya. Finally, we're going to poll during the show the best WGXC segments. The nominees are The Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate.